Chapter 9. The last sound Peter heard before he was quite alone were the mermaids retiring one by one to their bedchambers under the sea. He was too far away to hear their doors shut, but every door in the coral caves where they live rings a tiny bell when it opens or closes, as in all the nicest houses on the mainland, and he heard the bells. Steadily the waters rose till they were nibbling at his feet, and to pass the time until they made their final gulp, he watched the only thing on the lagoon. He thought it was a piece of floating paper, perhaps part of the kite, and wondered idly how long it would take to drift ashore. Presently he noticed, as an odd thing, that it was undoubtedly out upon the lagoon with some definite purpose, for it was fighting the tide, and sometimes winning. And when it won, Peter, always sympathetic to the weaker side, could not help clapping at the gallant piece of paper.
Hurrah! Hurrah! Such a brave piece of paper you are.
It was not really a piece of paper. It was the Neverbird, making desperate efforts to reach Peter on the nest. By working her wings, in a way she had learned since the nest fell into the water, she was able to some extent to guide her strange craft. But by the time Peter recognized her, she was very exhausted. She had come to save him, to give him her nest, though there were eggs in it. I rather wonder at the bird. For though he had been nice to her, he had also sometimes tormented her. I can suppose only that, like Mrs. Darling and the rest of them, she was melted because he had all his first teeth. She called out to him what she had come for, and he called out to her what she was doing there. But, of course, neither of them understood the other's language. In fanciful stories, people can talk to the birds freely, and I wish for the moment I could pretend that this were such a story, and say that Peter replied intelligently to the Neverbird. But truth is best, and I want to tell you only what really happened. Well, not only could they not understand each other, but they forgot their manners.
I want you to get into the nest,
the bird called, speaking as slowly and distinctly as possible.
And then you can drift ashore. But I am too tired to bring it any nearer. So you must try to swim to it.
What are you quacking about? Why don't you let the nest drift as usual?
I want you,
the bird said, and repeated it all over.
I want you to get into the nest, and then you can drift ashore. But I am too tired to bring it any nearer, so you must try to swim to it.
Then Peter tried slow and distinct.
What are you quacking about?
The Neverbird became irritated. They have very short tempers.
You dunderheaded little jay. Why don't you do as I tell you?
Peter felt that she was calling him names, and at a venture he retorted hotly.
You!
Then, rather curiously, they both snapped out the same remark.
Shut up!
Nevertheless, the bird was determined to save him if she could, and by one last mighty effort, she propelled the nest against the rock. Then up she flew, deserting her egg so as to make her meaning clear. Then at last he understood and clutched the nest and waved his thanks to the bird as she fluttered overhead. It was not to receive his thanks, however, that she hung there in the sky. It was not even to watch him get into the nest. It was to see what he did with her eggs. There were two large white eggs, and Peter lifted them up and reflected. The bird covered her face with her wings, so as not to see the last of them. But she could not help peeping between the feathers. I forget whether I have told you that there was a stave on the rock, driven into it by some buccaneers of long ago, to mark the site of buried treasure. You will remember I mentioned earlier that Peter had not been very kind to the Neverbird.
Cucklepot,
spoon nose, chicken in nose, blah
blah. The children had discovered the glittering hoard, and when in a mischievous mood, used to fling showers of moidores, diamonds, pearls, and pieces of eight to the gulls, who pounced upon them for food, and then flew away, raging at the scurvy trick that had been played upon them. The stave was still there, and on it Starkey had hung his hat, a deep tarpaulin, watertight, with a broad brim. Peter put the eggs into this hat and set it on the lagoon. It floated beautifully. The Neverbird saw at once what he was up to and screamed her admiration of him.
How you have surprised me, unpredictable boy. Would that your mother could see you now. A very proud one she would have been.
Alas, Peter crowed in agreement with her, not quite understanding the extent of her words. Then he got into the nest, reared the stave in it as a mast, and hung up his shirt for a sail. At the same moment, the bird fluttered down upon the hat and once more sat snugly on her eggs. She drifted in one direction, and he was borne off in another. Both cheering.
We're homeward bound, oh joyous sound. Goodbye, fare ye well. Goodbye, fare ye well. Come ready the capstan and turn quick around. Hurrah, me boys, we're homeward bound. Sweet, sweet home.
Of course, when Peter landed, he beached his bark in a place where the bird would easily find it. But the hat was such a great success that she abandoned the nest. It drifted about till it went to pieces, and often Starkey came to the shore of the lagoon, and with many bitter feelings, watched the bird sitting on his hat.
That chook had the devil's own luck written all over. First time I laid eyes on her. First, she took that boy from our grasp, and now my gallant hat! Bugaboo!
As we shall not see her again, it may be worth mentioning here that all Neverbirds now build in that shape of nest, with a broad brim on which the youngsters take an airing.
Hello?
Look! It's Peter! He's come back!
Great were the rejoicings when Peter reached the home under the ground almost as soon as Wendy, who had been carried hither and thither by the kite.
Welcome back, brave fellow. What of your wounds? Shall I call a doctor?
You saved my life, Peter. How will I ever repay you?
Say, Peter, where have you been?
The greatest adventure of all. How cleverly I built a raft of sticks. And just in time, as the tide came to carry me from the rock, I hoisted my shirt up as a flag, you see, so the wind could steer me away. Before long, I was sailing upside down, and when at last I caught a big billow, big, really big, it flung me into the air and sent my ship a-flying.
Of course, Peter had forgotten to mention the Neverbird's part in all of this. He stood with his arms raised triumphantly, his bare chest swelling with pride all the way up to his crop.
Oh, that is all splendid, Peter. Now put your shirt back on before you catch a cold.
We too went on the most superb adventure. John, Michael and I.
Slightly, John and I set out to find John's flamingo with a broken leg.
Pardon me, Michael, but I was telling the story. So, I put on my doctor's hat, filled a calabash with medicine, and stole some stockings for bandages. Off
and
we went.
And we were so sure we had found him, when all of a sudden, he had two
legs
again.
And so, he had both his legs again. But then, all the other flamingos had broken legs.
And we hadn't enough medicine.
So, we fought a bear instead.
I too went on an expedition of sorts. I bravely fought off six evil princes. And still, missing an arm, I was knighted Sir Twin the Second.
Twin, I think you should not have gone on that adventure, for I went on another, and being twins, Peter may say we oughtn't to split our adventure in two.
I visited the tailor gnome at 27 to make me a new pair of trousers with braids on them.
Pockets and I went treasure hunting, and we had to cut through thorny vines as thick as ourselves. Go on, Pockets. Show Peter what we found.
A feather from Missile Thrush. Oh, look, a kiss. And then a pea pod with a fairy letter in it. A stick for Slightly's new flute. A map. An old pirate coin. A magic rock necklace for Wendy, a hanky we named Hank, some golden vines with never bugs on it, and a beautiful butterfly for Curly to set free. Oh, that's just my slingshot. Where is it? Aha, here it is. Best of all, a key!
We don't quite know what it opens yet.
Every boy had adventures to tell, except poor Tootles, who was out picking ash apples for tea.
Do you mean to tell me I've missed yet another adventure?
But perhaps the biggest adventure of all was that they were several hours late for bed. This so inflated them that they did various dodgy things to get to stay up still longer, such as demanding bandages. But Wendy, though glorying in having them all home again safe and sound, was scandalised by the lateness of the hour.
Oh, to bed, my darlings! Oh, come on, to bed!
Wendy cried in a voice that had to be obeyed.
Good night, Father.
Next day, however, she was awfully tender and gave out bandages to everyone, and they played till bedtime at limping about and carrying their arms in slings.
Bugaboo. Someone asks me if we can have roasted Neverbird for dinner. We haven't roasted Neverbird for dinner.
Oh,
you to get into the nest. And then you can drift ashore, but I am too tired to bring it any nearer, so you must try to swim to it. What are you quacking about? Why don't you let the nest drift as usual? I want you to get into the nest, and then you can drift ashore, but I am too tired to bring it any nearer, so you must try to swim to it. What are you quacking about? You dunderhead jelly jar, why don't you do as I tell you? So are you. Shut up. You shut up.
No, you shut up.
You shut up.